Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission Thursday meeting, January 27, 2022. Before we get started, I'm going to take a roll call. Applin present.
Scott present.
Abel present.
Donald present.
Thank you, Commissioner Galo and Hildebrand were not able to attend, but we have more than enough to conduct business. This meeting is going to be called to order January 27, 2022 at 9:07 a.m. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Carter Smith has a statement to make.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, a public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I'd like for this fact to be noted in the official record of the meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Carter. Commissioners, as a reminder, please announce your name before you speak and speak slowly for the court reporter. First, the approval of minutes from the commission meeting held November 4, 2021, which have already been distributed. Can I get a motion and a second from a commissioner? Motion.
Mr. Bell seconds.
Commissioner Bell, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next, acknowledgement of the list of donations which has been distributed. And by the way, we always appreciate the donations. Thank you very much. Is there a motion for approval?
Oster.
Oster moved.
Abel second.
Abel second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next is consideration of contracts which have already been distributed. I'll need a motion and a second from a commissioner. Patton. Rolling second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Action item number one, implementation of legislation during the 87 Texas legislative session, House Bill 1927, relating to the provisions governing the carrying of a firearm. Recommended adoption of proposed changes. We have Mr. Luis. Good morning. How are you, Luis?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Luis Sosa. I'm the Chief of Staff of the Law Enforcement Division. I'm here today to propose adoption of the rule changes that were published in the December 24, 2021 issue of the Texas Register and that relate to the rules governing the possession, display, and use of firearms in state parks, wildlife management areas, and coastal management areas in response to the passage of House Bill 1927 by the 87th regular session of the Texas Legislature. Under the provisions of House Bill 1927, a person 21 years of age or older who is not otherwise prohibited by state or federal law from possessing a firearm may carry a handgun provided that it is concealed or in a holster without a permit in any location where such possession is not expressly prohibited by statute or prohibited pursuant to a statutory authority granted by statute. Under the provisions of House Bill 1927, the Commission does not have the authority to establish regulations to modify or prohibit the effect of this bill. As mentioned during yesterday's presentation, provisions of House Bill 1927 conflict with current department rules governing the possession and display of handguns by visitors in state parks, wildlife management areas, and coastal management areas, and therefore it is simply our intent through the proposed changes to harmonize department rules with provisions of House Bill 1927. As of this morning, we have received 13 comments through the public comment portal. Of the 13 comments, 9 individuals agree completely, 3 disagree completely, and 1 disagrees on a specific item. Of the 3 individuals that disagree completely, 1 provided a reason. As per this one individual, they disagreed with House Bill 1927 when it passed and therefore disagreed with anything related to House Bill 1927. The one individual that disagreed on a specific item also provided a reason. As per this one individual, they feel the rule language is lengthy and confusing. Again, our goal is simply to align department rules governing the possession and display of handguns with provisions of House Bill 1927. The proposed amendments, which have been provided to you, would alter our current rules to the effect of ensuring that department regulations regarding the possession and display of handguns in state parks, wildlife management areas, and coastal management areas do not conflict with provisions of House Bill 1927. Today, our staff recommends that Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt amendments to Chapter 31, of the Texas Administrative Code, Rule 59.131 and 59.134 concerning state parks operational rules, Chapter 31 of the Texas Administrative Code, Rule 65.199, 65.202, and 65.203 concerning public hunting proclamations, and to Chapter 31 of the Texas Administrative Code, Rule 57.1011 and 57.1012 concerning coastal management areas. This concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Louise. Commissioner, does anybody have questions for Louise? Hearing none. We also, I believe, no one has signed up to speak. So if there's no more comments or questions from the commissioners, then I'll need a motion and a second for approval.
Commissioner
Foster.
Bell second.
Bell second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries.
Thank you,
Louise.
Thank you.
Action item number two, State Parklands Passport Rule, recommended adoption of proposed changes. David Kurtenbach, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Commissioners, thank you all for your time this morning. My name is David Kurtenbach. I'm the Program Director for Business Management and State Parks here today to follow up on our conversation around the Parklands Passport Program. Our Parklands Passport Program is a program designed to help get specific groups into the parks with waived or discounted entry fees. And it's established in Parks and Wildlife Code 13018. And what this does is it really helps with access to the parks, again, as we've kind of discussed previously. So there are three different types of passes, or three different categories of four different types of passes included within our Parklands Passport Program, those being the seniors, either a full or a partial, disabled veteran, or disability. And with each of these passes, they either get a 100% discount or a 50% discount or a 50% rounded to the nearest dollar discount. The proposed change that we're making will kind of simplify that. An additional benefit is also for one accompanying person to be allowed for 50% in. Our proposed change is to look at this and extend what the benefit of that passport holder is onto that accompanying person. So it will round everything out and make it a more simplified process for everyone. It really impacts senior full as well as disabled veteran passports. Anticipated benefits of kind of talked to is just going to be greater access into the outdoors, getting people into our state parks to see the beauty of them, as well as simplifying the process overall, streamlining it, making it easier for our staff, and eliminating just one more barrier and another task that they can start to look at other things and focus their efforts in other ways. Public comment we received on it was seven that were supporting the change, three comments that were actually opposing it, and of those three, two gave reasoning for it. One of them would like to see it extended to allow more than one person into the park, to allow up to four people with that passport holder, and the other one felt that if you are to use a state park, you should pay for the state parks, and felt it was giving away too much benefit to the pass holders. Staff recommends for the commission to adopt the change to Rule 59.3, specifically Section 3 within TAC Chapter 31, concerning the entrance fees for the Parklands passports, for the passport holder, and for the accompanying person, as published in the December 24th Texas Register 468988. Happy to answer any questions or comments that there might be from everyone.
Thank you, David. Commissioners, questions? Hearing none, we have nobody registered or has asked or registered, signed up to speak. So if there's no comments or questions from commissioners, I will entertain a motion and a second for adoption. Scott, rolling second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries.
Thank you.
David, thank you. Action item number three, correction to largemouth bass harvest rules, recommended adoption of proposed changes. Michael Tennant, you're up. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Michael Tennant, and I'm the Regulations and Policy Coordinator in the Inland Fisheries Division. Today, I'll be presenting a proposed correction to largemouth bass harvest rules. The department has determined that an external administrative error in publication of rules in 2020 inadvertently resulted in incorrect largemouth bass harvest regulations in the Texas Administrative Code. Existing department publications and public information reflect the length and bag limits and special provisions intended by the commission and thus conflict with enforceable provisions currently in the Texas Administrative Code. Current erroneous largemouth bass regulations for 9 water bodies consist of a daily bag limit of 5 and a minimum length limit of 12 inches. The intended special bag possession and length limits for largemouth bass previously adopted by the Commission consist of a daily bag limit of 5 and maximum length limit of 16 inches and allowance for temporary possession of largemouth bass 24 inches or greater for weighing. Addressing this issue in a timely manner is a two-step process whereby the department first proposes and recommends adoption of a new special section to temporarily replace the current provisions in the fishing proclamation that were published in error in the Texas Administrative Code with the intended provisions presented on the previous slide. This new temporary rule would ensure that the intended harvest regulations for largemouth bass on these 9 water bodies are in effect for the remainder of the license year. The second step is that we will be proposing the same rule correction in the regular section as part of the 2022-2023 fishing proclamation, such that all harvest regulations will then be correct in the regular section and the temporary section will expire. A total of 6 public comments were received, with 4 agreeing completely and 2 disagreeing specifically with the proposed rules. Based on their comments, we felt the 2 respondents disagreeing specifically on the proposed changes may have misinterpreted these changes as new regulations for the 9 water bodies instead of a correction to the Texas Administrative Code. The outdoor annual and fishing regulations information on the TPWD website currently provide the intended regulations for the 9 water bodies. Both respondents expressed concerns about harvest of largemouth bass under 16 inches. TPWD data for these 9 water bodies indicate that we do not see overharvest of small bass. Staff recommends that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts new Section 57.985 concerning special bag possession and length limits with changes as necessary to the proposed text as published in the December 24, 2021 issue of the Texas Register. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Michael. Commissioners, any questions for Michael? Nobody is registered to speak in person. We did have an online registration of Mrs. Savannah Loftus. She does not wish to speak, I understand, but would like to register her vote as neutral on the item. Commissioners, anything? Any other questions, comments? Hearing none, I need a motion for approval in a second.
Abel, so moved.
Abel, Patton, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Action item number 4, spotted sea trout harvest rules. Recommended adoption of proposed changes. Ms. Hannah Bauer, good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, and fellow commissioners. For the record, my name is Hannah Bauer. I'm a data analyst on the policy and education team here in Coastal Fisheries. Today, I'm going to present our statewide saltwater fishing regulation recommendations and summarize our public comments received. I'll move through these next slides quickly. After the February 2021 freeze, we saw a major fish kill coastwide. 160,000 spotted sea trout were killed. Of those, the majority came from the upper and lower Laguna Madre systems. Due to this, an emergency action was enacted April 1st, 2021, which specified a 3-bag limit, a harvest size or slot size restriction of 17 to 23 inches. These only apply to the upper and lower Laguna Madre and 500 yards from the beachfront into the Gulf of Mexico, and were extended an additional 60 days, which expired September 27, 2021. One way we can measure our sport fish abundance is through our spring gillnet catch rates, seen here with the catch rate on the y-axis there and the year on the x-axis. The orange line represents the 10-year mean, which represents our current regulatory structure and a sort of recent history to which we can compare our catch rates. 2020 data is missing due to the COVID pandemic, and 2021 is on the far right there. You'll see it's 20% lower than our 10-year average catch rates and 20% lower than our 2019 catch rates. We can perform the same analysis by bay, which is seen on the left there, the percent decline from that 10-year mean. We saw marked declines in the upper and lower Laguna Madre, as well as Matagorda and San Antonio Bay. Corpus Christi had a modest increase due to the fact that it's a deeper bay and has more thermal refugia for these fish. In light of all of this, the proposed regulation would enact similar limits to the emergency regulation of a 3-fish bag limit, a 17 to 23-inch slot limit with no fish over 23 inches. It differs from the emergency action in its geographical extent. It would move south from East Matagorda Bay to the lower Laguna Madre and 500 yards into the Gulf. We're also proposing that this rule expire August 31st, 2023, at which time it would go back to coastwide 5-fish bag limit, 15 to 25-inch slot, and 1 fish over 25. The purpose of this regulation is to allow for 2 additional spawning seasons under these more restrictive harvest regulations and accelerate the fishery recovery. Once again, I'll take a moment to explain that 17 to 23-inch slot. Most of our anglers catch fish that are 15 to 16 inches, while our models suggest that a 15 to 20-inch size slot would offer similar benefits if enacted long-term. This 17 to 23-inch slot protects those smaller 15 to 16-inch fish, and we'll see those benefits faster within this 2-year period. Here's the geographical extent. On the left, you'll see the full range there, which is from the lower Laguna Madre, moving through the upper Laguna Madre, Corpus Christi, Aransas, San Antonio, and Matagorda Bay systems, and 500 yards into the Gulf. On the top right, you'll see the northern boundary, which is FM Road 457 in Matagorda County. And on the right bottom, you'll see that in Cameron County, there's the Brownsville Ship Channel, and it covers that bay system, but the beachfront side would extend down to the Rio Grande River, just as it did in the emergency action. As part of our stakeholder engagement process, we had 5 public hearings, one of which was virtual, and 4 of which occurred in mid-January along the coast. We also solicited comments through our public web portal, email, phone, and through letters. Additionally, the Coastal Resources Advisory Committee met in mid-January to weigh in on this proposal. This slide was made on Tuesday night and had 1,612 comments at the time. There's been about 141 comments since then that followed the same pattern, and this slide hasn't been updated. Of those, 61% of commenters supported this proposal, including CCA of Texas, which also would support additional measures that have equivalent biomass benefits. And the Coastal Resources Committee Advisory Committee supported this proposal and made a second motion to support a 17 to 20-inch slot limit, 2-fish bag limit, with that same expiration date, and express support for any more conservative measures the commission might deem necessary. 38% of commenters oppose. It's worth noting a somewhat unusual pattern in the opposition, though. About 10% of those opposed wanted more restrictive measures than what was proposed, a pattern we also saw in the general comments, with about 12% all overall wanting more restrictive measures. 28% opposed wanted the slot limit shifted to smaller size, 9% wanted a narrower slot, 10% opposed any change to the slot limit, and 14% opposed the change to the bag limit. 2% of commenters were neutral. With that, staff recommends the amendments to the statewide recreational and commercial fishing proclamation as published in the December 24, 2021 issue of the Texas Register. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Hannah. Commissioners, questions, comments for Hannah? Hearing none, we do have a few speakers that have requested to speak. So we'll hear from those speakers. I'll ask that you have 3 minutes to speak, and so hopefully you can get all you have to say within 3 minutes. So we'll start with those. First will be Everett Johnson, Seadrift, Texas Cowboy. Come on down, Everett. Thank you for coming. Good morning.
Thank you. Carter, thank you all for the opportunity to be here to speak today. I'm here to support the trout proposal. I live at Seadrift. I'm right on the coast. I'm in between Port O'Connor and Seadrift. And what we saw was very, very disappointing following the freeze last February. I'm very encouraged that you have considered the adoption of this proposal for a 3-fish bag limit with a slot of 17 to 23. I also want to just drop back a little bit and tell you that I'm also very pleased with the overall management that comes out of Coastal Fisheries Division. If it were not for the hard work of all the individuals in that division of your department, we could have come out of that freeze in much, much worse shape. Quote Larry McKinney, former director of the Coastal Fisheries Division. He said, if you have to suffer a natural event that's going to produce a fish kill, the best way to enter it is with a larger population as you can possibly have. It just makes a lot of sense. And I'm very pleased that the direction Coastal Fisheries have been managing that fishery. And I want to also tell you that being able to have that enacted prior to the beginning of the spawning season, in my opinion, is very, very important. Two spawning seasons should provide a great boost to the fishery. And I'm also very pleased to see that you have added a date at which this special regulation will expire. And we will return to the former regulation and the former law. And so often in my line of business, editor, publisher of Texas Saltwater Fishing Magazine, people say often, TPW only takes away, they never give back. And I can understand the reason for that comment, and that's why I'm very encouraged that that you put August 31, 2023, as the date when the emergency greater conservation proposed in this measure would expire. So thank you, and I'm very hopeful to see the new regulation hit the water.
Thank you, Everett. Thank you for your time. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Okay, next, Shane. Shane Bonneau, Coastal Conservation. Following Shane will be John Gully. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, and fellow commissioners. My name is Shane Bonneau. I'm here to speak for the Coastal Conservation Association, CCA Texas. We just want to be here to express our support for the proposal to go temporarily to go to 17 to 23 inches in the 3-fish bag limit to help the trout species recover from the freeze. Also, just want to take a brief moment to, like Mr. Johnson did, thank Coastal Fisheries staff for all their work following the freeze, and specifically the hatchery staff for the work that they've done to put trout back into the bays of Texas, ramping up production this past year and preparing for the next production season's coming. We really support them and appreciate the efforts that they do to put fingerlings back in the water. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and I'll take any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Shane.
Thank you.
John Gully. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I am an individual fisherman, very passionate, avid fisherman. I've been fishing the East Matagorda Bay primarily since the late 90s, early 2000s, and I'm also a degreed meteorologist. So every year I'm watching the weather and concerned, you know, that there's a major freeze that's going to happen. And so we're always on pins and needles, you know, because, you know, we're concerned about the fishing industry. And, you know, when the freeze happened, I saw pictures, I saw videos, and I went out myself about 4 or 5 days later, and I noticed, you know, some dead fish on the water, and I was out there with my son, and he held up a few fish. He's 15 years old. And fishing should be about the kids. It should be getting the kids out there and enjoying the industry. And so I really appreciate the Fisheries Division for putting together this reduction and to help the fishery get back to what it was. And it's a shame it takes a disaster to get fishermen to realize that we need to get back to conservation. It's always about filling the cooler, taking the pictures, having the fishing deck full of fish, having the cleaning tables full of fish. We have too many people out there that are taking several trips a day, and I know they provide a service to elder people, people that don't have a boat, but they're taking two or three trips a day. I've seen it firsthand. They go out, and it shouldn't be about the money. It should be about taking people fishing, show them conservation. So I really support this, but down the road, I want to see, you know, more things happen. We need to help our oyster industry. It needs to get back to what it was. I have noticed over the years where the water would clear up after 2 or 3 hours after a windy day. Now it takes a day or 2 days for the water to clear up. And you know the oysters, that filters that water. So we need to help that in that way, and that will help the fish, the barnacles. You know, it's just a circle of life. But also want to, you know, just say thank you, and let's keep it going for the kids. Get out there and have fun. You know, I look forward to going fishing. It's amazing to take my son out there and take his friends out there that don't get to go fishing and see the smiles on their face and catch fish. But when I see cleaning tables full of fish, it's just so disheartening. It almost sometimes doesn't want to. I lose the enthusiasm to go fishing because for them it's all about the dollar, the money. For me, it's about having fun, seeing the sunsets, seeing the smiles on the kids' faces, and the memories of my dad taking me fishing. It's all about the memories. And I thank you very much for your time.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you, for your presentation. One thing that Shane mentioned that I want to bring up is the hatchery spawn that are being added back into the fishery. It's my understanding there's been millions of those hatchery fish, spawnings that have been deposited. And has that been taken into consideration in this issue in this move? I'm neutral on the regulations, but I just want to make sure that, you know, with these millions of new spawns added, does that change the science on this situation? That's my comment and my question.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for letting me speak. My family's been fishing on the Texas coast for 90 years, and my kids are third generation, and we've seen the ups and downs of the coast, and the most important thing is to make it sustainable down there. And I think this regulation after the freeze is very important and a really good step. And I've, from what I've heard, y'all researched it very well, and the science is behind it and the biologists are behind it. And I look forward to the results of this reduction, and hopefully it'll work well, and we can go back to a larger back to the five fish if it warrants. But thanks so much for the work this group does, and protecting and making this wonderful resource that we have available amongst all the pressure that we have of population growth and more boats and more people. It's just never been more important for y'all to work to sustain that population of all the different animals and fish and birds down there. So thanks so much for what y'all do.
Thank you, Dan. That's all I have registered to speak. Is there anyone else in the audience that seeing none? Commissioners, thoughts, comments, questions? Been a lot of input on this subject. The freeze was devastating, and so we're pleased and proud to be able to work together, and that for the fishing industry and the community to work with us for this resource. It was mentioned that this is does have a sunset on it. That's intentional, so it goes back to the regulations that were prior to this, and this is just for it's intentional. I think it's well thought through, and I think it's a good way to bring back our fishery that really got hit hard last February in the freeze. So thank you for everybody that's participated in this. Thank you for all the comments. If there's no other comments from any commissioners, I'll need a motion for approval and a second. Rollings. Patton's second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Hearing none, action item 4, motion carries. Thank you. Action item number 5, exchange of land, Parker County, approximately 12 acres, Mineral Wells State Park and Trailway. Trey Vick. Good morning, Trey.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Trey Vick. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. Today I'm going to present to you an exchange of land in Parker County. It's at Lake Mineral Wells State Park and Trailway. Lake Mineral Wells State Park is located just outside of Mineral Wells, Texas. The park and trailway consists of about 3,300 acres located on Rock Creek. In 1922, the city of Mineral Wells built Lake Mineral Wells to increase the growing city's water supply. In 1975, after the closing of Fort Walters, the city and the Fort Walters donated the lake and the surrounding acreage to TPWD. The city retained responsibility for the dam and the spillway. Recently, there was a survey completed by the city, and we discovered that several state park structures were located on city property. The city approached us and has proposed an exchange of land to cure those encroachments. In exchange for the land to cure the encroachments, the city is asking for some acreage below the dam and spillway to increase their access for maintenance and just so in case they need to get down there. The final acreage configuration is still in negotiation, but it'll be at a minimum an equal swap. It's looking like Texas Parks and Wildlife is going to come out a little bit ahead. This is a map of the proposed exchange where we're at now. You can see that the Texas Parks and Wildlife land is in green, and the city, what the city's asking for is in yellow. We received two comments in support of this item. And if there's no questions, I ask that the commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the resolution attached as Exhibit A. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Trey. Any questions from commissioners? No one signed up to speak, so if there's no question from commissioners, I'll entertain a motion in a second.
Commissioner Bell, so moved.
Bell.
Foster, second.
Foster, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Trey.
Thank you.
Action item number six, exchange of land, Somerville County, approximately 0.2 acres at Dinosaur Valley State Park. Mr. Trey Vick, good morning.
Again, thank you for letting me present for the record. My name is Trey Vick. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This is a second reading of an exchange of land in Somerville County, approximately 0.2 acres at Dinosaur Valley State Park. Dinosaur Valley State Park is located in Somerville County, just outside the little town of Glenrose. Dinosaur Valley State Park opened in 1972. It's about 1,600 acres in Somerville County, just southwest of the Metroplex. The park is one of my favorite. It sits along the Paluxy River and is well known for the dinosaur tracks that are preserved in the riverbed. It's been designated as a national natural landmark by the National Park Service. We have been asked to acquire a 0.2-acre buffer from an adjacent private landowner to meet new requirements set forth by TCEQ for a wastewater treatment facility we own at the park. The staff has begun negotiations with the landowner, and in exchange for the buffer, the gentleman is asking for an equal amount of state land to improve access to his property. This exchange of land is located well away from any of the park improvements or access to the public, and it'll have no impact on park operations. Here's a general map of the boundary of Dinosaur Valley State Park. The star indicates the location of the wastewater plant and the proposed exchange. Here's a close-up for you. The property in green is what we need for our buffer for the wastewater plant outlined in white, and the property in yellow is what we're proposing to exchange the landowner. We've had two comments, one in support, one in opposition. And if there's no questions, I ask that the Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the resolution attached as Exhibit A. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have any.
Commissioners, any questions for Trey?
Just one quick question. This is Foster. The comment in opposition, did they give a reason?
No, sir.
Okay.
Anybody else? Hearing none, if I could get a motion and a second from commissioners. Patton. Rolling second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Trey.
Thank you.
Action item number seven, request for drainage easement, Orange County, approximately 20 acres. At the Lower Natchez Wildlife Management Area, Mr. Ted Hollingsworth. Good morning, Ted.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This is the second reading of an item that's brought to you as a result of a request by the Orange County Drainage District for an easement, a drainage easement across the Lower Natchez Wildlife Management Area. That wildlife management area is in the extreme southeast corner of Texas, in Orange County, near the confluence of the lower of the Natchez River and Sabine Lake. At a little over 8,000 acres, three different units. This easement request affects two of those units. primarily submerged lands, emergent wetlands, marshes, coastal wetlands. There are some uplands with some forested, some coastal forest areas, but mostly wetlands, and mostly that's what the wildlife management area is there to protect. It is a very popular destination for waterfowl hunting and for fishing. As you can see, there's a boat launch, and there are some facilities for folks to be able to bank fish. The issue here is that the wildlife management area lies immediately south of the community of Bridge City. And long before there was a Bridge City or a wildlife management area, the surface drainage from stormwater discharge was into that marsh that we now manage. And as the city grew, as the city formed, that community formed, drainage ditches were cut to help get that water into that marsh. We've reached a point now, just from decades of steady development and from some subsidence that's occurred, that and we just seem to be having more tropical storms in southeast Texas, that community is flooding with increasing frequency. And so the drainage district has retained consultants who have come up with a design for improving those ditches and canals to get that water to the edge of the wildlife management area. And the need for the easement is so those canals can be improved across the wildlife management area to help get that water out to open water in the lake and into those coves adjacent to, I'm sorry, to the river and those coves adjacent to the river. And the reason we want to do that is we don't want that increase in velocity and quantity of water to scour out that marsh that we've worked so hard to protect and that attracts, of course, the duck hunters and fishermen. The drainage district is responsible for that. They've been working with us for about a year now to optimize both the drainage of the community and minimize that harm to the wildlife management area. Staff is certainly convinced that there's really no feasible and prudent alternative to their request to improve those ditches and canals, and again to help get that water across the wildlife management area in order to minimize impacts to the natural resources of the wildlife management area. In this map, you can see the two units involved, the Old River unit and the Nelda Stark unit. You can see those blue lines that you can see where those existing drainage district ditches and canals enter the wildlife management area. Excuse me. And you can see the areas in blue that we're suggesting that you authorize the easement to improve either construct or improve existing canals to get that water from where it enters the wildlife management area out to open water more efficiently. We've received four responses, three in support, one in opposition. The one in opposition left a comment that simply said the department should not grant easements. That was the sum of the comment. I'd also like to mention that Mr. Don Corona, the general manager of the water district, of the drainage district, is in the audience today. He's come in case you have any questions for the district. And staff is recommending that the commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Commissioners, any questions for Ted? Hearing none, we do have one speaker that is signed up, Mr. Don Corona, Orange, Texas. Welcome, Don.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Commissioners, thank you all for letting us be here today and also and for your consideration of this request. With me this morning, I'm Don Corona for the record. I'm the general manager of the Orange County Drainage District. With me this morning is our general counsel, Martin Dyes, and one of our elected directors, James Scales. Mr. Hollingsworth has alluded to the rainfall that we have had. Orange County has been absolutely decimated by not just Hurricane Harvey and Tropical Storm Imelda, two epic and historic rain events, but we do, for whatever reasons, have increased rainfall. And consequently, our citizens, not just in the city of Bridge City, but also in the Orangefield area and unincorporated areas of Orange County, they're sustaining repetitive flooding. And we really think that these drainage easements and the projects that we propose are really going to help mitigate the flooding and damages. I want to thank Mr. Hollingsworth and also all of the Parks and Wildlife staff that have been working with us for a very long time. They've been patient and have listened to us and to our consultants, and we just appreciate the respectful hard work that the staff has provided. With that, I'm here to answer any questions, if any. But again, thank you all very much for your consideration of this request.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for making the trip. Appreciate it very much. Any questions from commissioners? If not, hearing none, I'll need a motion and approval from, a motion and a second from commissioners.
I'll make the motion.
Scott?
Commissioner Bell, second.
Bell, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
Briefing item number 8, pronghorn season extension. Sean Gray. Good morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Chairman, commissioners. For the record, my name's Sean Gray, and I'm the mule deer and pronghorn program leader. And as you remember, during the November work session meeting, Commissioner Patton requested staff to evaluate landowner opinions on the new pronghorn season extension. So that's what I'd like to share with you all this morning. As a reminder, the commission adopted new pronghorn hunting regulations in March of 2021. One change was to extend the 9-day season to 16 days by adding 1 week to the end of the 9-day season. Since TPWD issues pronghorn permits to set harvest quotas for each property, staff had no biological concerns extending the season from 9 days to 16 days. And hunter and landowner opinion surveys sent out by staff prior to proposing the season extension last year indicated strong support. To query landowners on their thoughts regarding the new 16-day pronghorn season, another opinion survey was sent out to all landowners who received pronghorn permits during the 2021 hunting season. The survey was conducted online and was emailed to participants on multiple occasions this past November and December. Overall, 541 surveys were sent to landowners with a response rate of 41%. Most landowners in both the Panhandle and Trans-Pecos preferred the current 16-day season over the historic 9-day season. Landowners were also asked if their hunters used the added week. In the Panhandle, 66% of the respondents said that their hunters used the additional week. About half of the responding landowners in the Trans-Pecos said that their hunters used the extra week. One requirement to receive pronghorn permits is that landowners must report to the department the number of permits used each year. When looking at these data, pronghorn permit utilization in 2020, which was under the 9-day season, and 2021, which was under the 16-day season, was similar in both the Panhandle and Trans-Pecos. Although permit use actually went down in the Trans-Pecos, even with an additional week to hunt pronghorn. These data indicate that only 50 to 60% of the permits staff issue each year used, and that by adding the extra week to the 9-day season did not increase harvest. In summary, the majority of landowners who responded to the opinion survey preferred the new 16-day season. Again, since TPWD issues pronghorn permits to set harvest quotas for each property, staff have no biological concerns maintaining the 16-day season. Permit utilization data indicate that by adding an extra week to the 9-day season did not increase harvest. And I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have at this time.
Commissioners, any questions for Sean?
Well, Patton, first off, thank you for doing that. I was primarily curious. I think you know I have some property out in the Trans-Pecos area, and my awareness, interest in pronghorn has certainly increased over maybe the last 5 years by quite a bit. And one thing, I think I know the answer, but there, pronghorn, you know, there's no CWD issues. They don't have to, particularly in like Hudspeth County, you don't have to turn in or have a checkpoint or anything like that, right?
That's correct. For pronghorn, that's correct.
All right. And, you know, as an added comment, you know, if I were to not task you with something for the next meeting, but one of the things I've become more and more aware of is, you know, call it the legacy fencing that exists out in the Trans-Pecos, which is, you know, I should have a picture of it, but it's, you know, basically sheep or goat fencing, which call it halfway up, nothing's going to get through it. And then, you know, you got three strands of barbed wire above it. You know, if we ever wanted to have a policy or some type of campaign to, you know, create aware, and I think, quite frankly, a lot of ranchers don't have sheep or goats anymore. I mean, you know, if they have it, that's one thing. But I think you've got a lot of that type of fencing that prevents pronghorn from really just moving from one area to the other, and you have these kind of isolated genetic herds that were certainly meant to roam over a much larger area. And I don't know if we can, whether it's a voluntary campaign or just get the message out, you know, let's open up a little bit of that fence, change it. And obviously it's a large financial effort, but with landowners, maybe if they're getting increased revenue from pronghorn hunting, that's certainly to everyone's benefit for them to be incented to do that. And it would be a good example of, you know, I always like the phrase, hunting is conservation, so this would be perhaps a step in that direction. Anyway,
yes,
thank you for bringing that information.
Hey, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Bobby. Any other commissioners, comments, questions?
Chairman, if we could Sean elaborate? Because we've got a lot going on with NRCS and Borderlands
yes.
Research Institute on the
Absolutely.
Fence work out there. Sean, you mind just touching on that quickly?
Yes, I'd love to. Do I got like 5 minutes?
No.
Yeah. No. No, really, fencing is a huge issue for pronghorn. And over the last 10 years, the department, the landowners, Borderlands Research Institute, NRCS, I could go on and on and on the partners that we have created and have really focused on that fence issue. We've replaced hundreds of miles of net wire fence. Net wire fence is an issue for pronghorn. Every once in a while, they'll jump a fence, but they sure don't want to, and they want to crawl underneath it. And in some of the Hudspeth County country, I know we've done a lot of NRCS EQIP projects. We have just, say, last year, we updated a really nice how to modify fence for pronghorn. Like a two-page publication that we have sent out to landowners and through e-blast with our pronghorn permits. So that fencing is a huge issue for us, and we do our very best to eliminate that issue for pronghorn. But it is a work in progress because no exaggeration. There's thousands and thousands of miles of fencing in pronghorn country. So that's an issue. Pronghorn do need to move. We're working on it. I really appreciate you bringing that up into this forum, and hopefully maybe we can get more money for fence replacement.
Thank you, Sean, for working on that. And you're right. They don't like to jump. Bobby, thank you for bringing it up. Anybody else? Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
Briefing item number 9, State Park Centennial Update. Mr. Hartley, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, thank you for having me. For the record, my name is Kai Harkey, and I'm the Director of Interpretation for Texas State Parks. And I'm here to share with you a little bit about our vision for 2023, the celebration of 100 years of Texas State Parks. I'd like to talk to you about what we're celebrating, what we picture for that year, and the work that's being done right now to get us ready for that. So put yourself back 100 years ago. We've got earliest conservation in the country. People like John Muir, the Buffalo Soldiers, the first park rangers in Yosemite National Park, are pioneers for conservation in the country at the turn of the century. In Texas, we've got, get my clicker figured out. Forgive me. Andrew, help me out. Where am I pointing? Thank you. In Texas, the Texas Revolution, the protection of our Texas Revolution sites like the San Jacinto Monument, Washington, Nebraska's the Alamo, helps to bring about the conservation ethic in Texas. And we see Governor Pat Neff, governor from 1921 to 1925, is really where we can trace a lot of the origins of Texas State Parks back to. He had a vision for Texas tourism, and on May 7th, 1923, legislation begins the Texas State Parks Board. So in 2023, 100 years from this, what we're celebrating is really we're celebrating your predecessors, the beginning of the Texas State Parks Board, the first six advocates for Texas State Parks. And they did a good job. Mother Neff State Park, our very first state park, is a donation from Governor Pat Neff's mother, family land. And 10 years or so later, the Civilian Conservation Corps comes about to many of our parks, beginning sites like Indian Lodge, Lake Corpus Christi, Paladero Canyon, and Balmoray. And 99 years later, they have succeeded with over 600,000 acres of public land in Texas State Parks, 89 sites that we're proudly managing and protecting today. So that's what we're celebrating. That we're celebrating 100 years since the beginning of Texas State Parks. During 2023, we've got big vision for how we want to use this celebration to support Texas State Parks for the next 100 years. And this is the team that is in place right now getting ready for that. The Texas State Parks Division, the agency as a whole, our friends at the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and the Butler Brothers, a branding and marketing group that we're partnering with here. Commissioner Bell, we appreciate the support of the Urban Outreach Advisory Group in helping us plan for this, and as we get closer, leveraging many of the partnerships that represented there towards success. The State Park Advisory Board is also, sorry, the State Park Advisory Committee is also involved in these early planning stages for the centennial, and all of our work is carrying out the State Park Centennial Plan, which I believe y'all are familiar with. So, what we have in mind, success, what does insane success look like during 2023? We are going to engage new and diverse audiences for the next 100 years of managing Texas State Parks. We hope to build partnerships that will also help us welcome new and diverse audiences as well as steward our parks. We'd like to increase donation revenue to pursue operational excellence in Texas State Parks. And we just want to celebrate 100 years of our predecessors and their work. So to do that, the people involved, the Butler Brothers, again, a branding and marketing firm we're partnered with, is helping us with much of the strategic planning to get ready for that year. They've conducted focus groups to help us understand the marketing angles and language that's going to help us reach new audiences. And they'll be involved in many of the paid media campaigns to help us have a large profile for the Texas State Parks during 2023. Michelle, your team is stepped up to the challenge and is eager, I should say, chomping at the bit to help support and welcome new and diverse audiences for our centennial with the TV show, the magazine group, social media teams, marketing, and the press office all already beginning conversations with what their work will look like during 2023. Some examples of what this could look like, we could see the Parks and Wildlife PBS show have a big focus on Texas State Parks during 2023. We will see a lot of focus on state parks in our Parks and Wildlife magazine. and we'll see paid media, paid social media, helping us reach audiences that likely have never heard of Texas State Parks in some cases. So we also want to build partnerships for the next 100 years, partnerships that help us increase awareness as we are welcoming the next generation of park stewards and park visitors, and partnerships that are going to help us actually steward these lands for the next 100 years. Our partners, Annie Brown, Susan Houston, and the talented team at the Parks and Wildlife Foundation are also ready and willing to help us out. They've already launched their $25 million capital campaign, which we're very grateful for. If you're familiar with the Gear Up for Game Wardens website, a similar model will be taken to Texas State Parks, where donors can look at and identify the specific needs at their favorite Texas State Park and make donations to directly contribute to their backyard park. We're excited also with the help of the foundation to open Palo Pinto Mountains during this centennial year. And all of this work that the foundation, as our nonprofit partner, is going to help us pursue operational excellence for the next 100 years of Texas State Parks. And then we want to just take plenty of time to just celebrate the work that's been done for the past 100 years. So you'll see a very high profile of Texas State Parks for the calendar year 2023. Many, if not all, of our Texas State Parks will host a celebration, a 100-year celebration of their parks, welcoming new audiences through those events. Our good friend George Bristol has a History of Texas State Parks book coming out, so we'll see the celebration of the Texas State Parks Centennial through history websites and many books. There's a very impressive collection of artists that have contributed their talents to depict Texas State Parks, and that will go on in a gallery to begin at the Bob Bullock Museum and will make its way to the Whitney Museum, the Houston Museum of Natural Sciences, to celebrate 100 years of Texas State Parks. So it's going to be a high profile. The way I've been saying is never will more people have talked about Texas State Parks than in 2023, and we'll see that high profile nature with 100-year branded efforts on our website and different merchandising, include maybe some inner tubes. We're excited. I'm excited. 2023 celebrates 100 years of Texas State Parks. That's a big deal. And 2023 is going to be big. We hope to engage new audiences, increase donation revenue, build partnerships for the next 100 years, and celebrate that 100-year history. This is the team that is working right now, I should say, has been working for about a year and a half already. And we're excited about it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Kai, thank you. It's a great report. Commissioners, questions, comments?
Chairman, Commissioner Bell, one, I'd like to thank Kai in public for your attendance at our last outreach committee meeting and providing opportunity for everyone there to have feedback and then obviously acting on their feedback. And also, just as a side note, you said something just now. As we're talking about branding, and maybe it goes to Butler Brothers, but this concept, you use the term your backyard park. I don't know if that's a term we might be able to use around Texas for people when, if we, you know, hit people up in these local areas, and if we're talking about, you know, I mean, I'm not too far from Huntsville State Park. Maybe that's my backyard park, but right. Maybe we can target some advertising and just remind everybody where their backyard park is to get them out more. So just a thought.
Sure.
But thank you very much for the work you and the team have been doing. And Rodney, thank you, too, for all the work you've been doing and everyone that's been involved in that. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Oliver. Anybody else? 100 years, big deal. It's exciting.
It is.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Carry on. I think it's exciting times. All right. Mr. Smith, this commission has completed its business. I declare us adjourned at 10:10 a.m.